Hello and welcome to the PMQ Live update for April 13th. I'm Brian Hernandez, and today I'm with the lovely Donatella Arpaia, Chef Donatella Arpaia, Food Network personality, Iron Chef judge. Donatella, say hello to the world.
Hi, world.
Hello. I really wanted to talk with Donatella because she's in a kind of a unique position being up there in the epicenter up in New York. She's got a couple locations, one in Times Square, one in Grand Central Station area. So she's had to do some things that some people haven't been able or had to do yet, but we definitely want to let people know how she's dealing with it and maybe give some tips. So why don't you kind of give a brief rundown, brief history of, you know, your life in the pizza world, and then we'll go from there.
Sure, sure. So pizza, my pizza world started about, 6 years ago now. I moved away from fine dining, and then I went into the pizza business. And a couple of years ago, I launched my first quick service upscale pizza concept in Grand Central Terminal called Prova Pizza Bar. And it's artisanal pizza. It's a hybrid of Roman Neapolitan style pizza. And then I opened my second location just under a year ago in Times Square in the Moxie Hotel. So yes, the two locations that are tourist related and office related. So we're in the crux and the heart of being most affected by the coronavirus pandemic in terms of what's going on in the world.
Well, as you said, tourist related, but also just general transportation. I mean, just being there at Grand Central Station, you got people coming and going all over the place. So who knows where they've been and who they've talked to. I mean, I assume this is it's definitely hit you hard, I assume. Well, I know, but I wanted to ask you the first question I usually ask everybody. Sure. What was the first adaptation you had to make when the situation hit? And then kind of give a brief description, and we'll go into detail later. But, you know, from day one to now, what?
Yeah, I mean, the first adaptation went from, it kind of moved quite quickly, but, you know, I was constantly monitoring the situation and speaking to my partners about, and my employees about what the best thing to do was. And also, you know, depending on where you are in the world, and I have a lot of relatives living in Italy, and I think people that had close contact with Europeans were getting more fearful more quickly. I realized it was going to get really, really bad in New York. Also, my husband's a surgeon, and he keeps me up to date with all that's going on, too. So we fairly quickly decided that we needed to close both locations, which was a very difficult decision. It goes against, you know, our nature as New Yorkers, sticking it out. I actually had to tell my managers that we had to close and they didn't want to. And I just felt that we were putting lives in danger because of where they were located, because of how my employees had to come to work, which is through mass transit. And I also realized in my specific situation, and every situation is differently, when I'm dealing with such massive rent, that it did not make sense to stay open. I mean, business, it wasn't like a slow drop. It was like jumping off a cliff. So I realized that very quickly, and I have to look at the dates, but time, there's no sense of time right now that we're all living at home, but
Nope. You know, there's no days.
Pretty quickly. And actually, for each space, so one is the MTA, in essence, which is my landlord, and the other one, it's the hotel. But we did speak to the hotel, and they basically said, you know, when their occupancy dropped. And I think there was this kind of wait and see, too. Like, the MTA wasn't speaking, even the hotel wasn't speaking. Everyone is just kind of like in shock and awe and debating what needs to be done. But then we spoke to the hotel, and they said, yeah, you guys need to close. We're, you know, and Tao, who was also in the food service in our hotel, closed a few days before we did. So for the Moxie, it just didn't make any sense to stay open because our business is directly geared from tourism and offices. Right. and offices were at that point quarantined. People were told to stay home. And the MTA, and I'm sure you'll see there's a lot of press going on right now because there's tenants suing and, you know, there's discussion about how the MTA, the irony of how the MTA is, excuse me, handling the situation because they sent rent notices out. And, you know, you have the governor of the state who I think appoints MTA board,
right,
basically saying shut down. And they're saying, you know, here's the rent and we're staying open. So there's these inconsistent messages going on.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of messages out there. I mean, you've got to be communicating with, you know, your landlords and other people as far as like who you're actually dealing with. But I did want to say, you said you this was a conscious choice because of the safety of your customers, well, your staff, first of all, and then your customers. But I mean, it wasn't anything you were forced to do. You just, this was the fiscally responsible thing to do. So,
I mean, all of the above. It was pretty obvious. A lot of times you're kind of torn. You know, is it the moral thing to do and the fiscal? In this case, it was very obvious that it was the moral thing to do. And fiscally, it was obvious that this was fiscally the obvious decision too. And I also have a lot of friends in the industry. And what was shocking to me in those initial days was I thought, you know, being a New Yorker, that if you like to cook, people order in all the time. I thought when this occurred, delivery was going to spike, especially in residential neighborhoods. So I said, oh, maybe, you know, delivery is something that would make sense. But I had heard right before I made the decision to close that even in the residential, strong residential locations, that when the restaurants were ordered to close, but you could stay open for delivery, that it dropped, I mean, I don't know, like 60-70%. So you can imagine. So what I found interesting, and now, you know, as we're in this now, it's a few weeks later, so people are over the shock and awe of it, and still no toilet paper out there, but and I think we're still in shock, but I think people are more used to it. But for example, and this plays into how we react, hopefully, when we reopen, is it's not, it's the customer and their feeling of lack of trust. And not because of the industry, but just lack of trust. So they would prefer, what I found that they would prefer was to go out and go food shopping and buy their own food as opposed to get it delivered. So, you know.
Well, I mean, this is, I just wanted to interject here.
It's,
I mean,
not
this
something
is
you
one
can
of the
fight.
Points, communication with your customers. I mean, you want to make sure that they know what you're doing to stay safe and make themselves, or give them that peace of mind. So how have you done that with communication with your customers? I guess first of all, letting them know that you were going to have to close down for a little while, and it's for everybody's benefit, but to let them know, hey, we're coming back. I mean, what's kind of been, you want to stay relevant and top of mind on social media. What have you guys been doing for that?
For sure. Well, you know, social media is the best way to stay relevant. And in a lot of ways, I'm busier than ever, which is ironic because working from home, homeschooling my children because I'm a mother as well. But also, I think that, you know, my husband, who's a surgeon, and me, who's in the food business, in a lot of ways, we're getting more requests than ever to do a lot of live media, like I'm doing right now, which is interesting. It's like the perfect storm. So, obviously staying relevant through social media. You know, next week I'm excited because I spoke to my managers and, you know, it's very personal to me, being a New Yorker and hearing and knowing, you know, my husband spent his career at Columbia and Sinai. And so we know a lot of colleagues that, and those are very hard hit hospitals. And my brother-in-law's, you know, a nurse, and to hear all the deaths of the people on the front line and the police officers. And so we want to do something. So I just spoke to my managers on Friday, and I said, because right now, you know, my manager are still on payroll because of the program through the government. And I said, would you be willing, and you don't have to go in, and I'd like to do a lot of donations just for a week, not to sell to customers, just to sell to people, to donate to people on the front line, meaning the officers and hospitals. And they said, yeah, basically, we have the flour, we have everything, we just need cheese. So I called Bonnie, who I have a very good relationship with because I'm the brand ambassador, and I said, can you donate cheese? And they said, absolutely. So that's coming in on Thursday, and we're going to next week basically be making pies and donating all week. But yeah, how to stay relevant, just like I said, this is a very weird situation because we're not talking about, you know, fighting traditional economic downturns or, you know, everything else that we've gone through, or, you know, our product or bad customer reviews, whatever any person in an industry that they own. This is, you're dealing with an invisible enemy, that it's global. It's so large scale and massive that we're forced to do something very uncomfortable, which is wait and see. And the only thing that I can tell you that we are doing now is, no matter what, and thankfully I do have a husband who's a surgeon, because it's hard to translate all this information that we're getting. And one thing that I do know is that if and when the economy does reopen, it's not going to be, I doubt, it's going to be because we have a cure for COVID. I don't think a cure for COVID is going to come for a while. From what I understand, it takes at least a year. So the question is,
there's never going to be a cure. We just got to,
how do we
got to figure out the next step to combat it. And that's fine. Like you said, your husband, he's there on the front lines.
How do you operate post-COVID? So let's say the president determines that, you know, I don't know, an arbitrary date, in 30 days we reopen. So in a lot of ways, COVID's still here. A lot of people say, my husband believes, warmer weather will lead to better situations. But, you know, is everyone going to be required to wear wet masks? I deal in quick service, so I'm already looking into all the protocols to put into place to set myself up to make sure that, most importantly, that the customer is going to feel safe to order from me to come into my restaurant. So whatever protocols I have to put in and what that looks like is going to be very interesting and new. And also, like you said, it's not even, we can't even get the, you know, sanitizers and masks if we wanted to when we reopen right now, because it's all, rightfully so, being placed in the places that need it most, like police officers. Right. And so it's a very weird situation. Very weird.
Well, it's something you had mentioned too, is about kind of changing the mindset when we go back to normal, but it's not going to be normal. It's not going to be the old normal. It's the new world order, for lack of a better term, which is very scary when you say it, but you got to change your mindset for that, because a lot of these practices you're doing now, we're going to have to maintain in the future. Otherwise, this could happen again. If we get lax about it now, we think we've won. We haven't won. They're just waiting. So I did want to actually talk to you about let me see what it was. It was you decided to close down your two locations there in New York City, in the hot spots, you know, mass transit and tourist spots. I assume you had a fridge full of goods. Did you sell them? Did you donate them? How did you manage that, kind of offset the cost of, I mean, even if you had to eat that cost, I mean, doing something good with it. What did you guys do?
Obviously, we took photos to show to our insurance company in terms of loss of goods. But it happened very, very quickly when we decided. And it was the weekend from day to day. And I remember specifically with Grand Central, it was the weekend, I think. And I said, I think the governor just said, you know, people, you can't congregate more than 50 people at the time. And then my manager said, you know, there's people grouping three or four people and the cops are kicking them out. So at that point, I was like, this is ridiculous. We have to close. And even then, I think it was weird to know, what do we do with this food? Could it have been, could people have touched it that had COVID? So a lot of it, unfortunately, was, I think they did donate some stuff, gave it to a lot of employees, but some was thrown out, and it was like a situation where you can't, you don't even have time to do the right thing. But for example, I've been part of City Harvest for years, and there's a lot of movement going on right now to help City Harvest. I just did a video, and we're doing a big promotion to raise money for City Harvest to feed the hungry. So much like in Grand Central Terminal, where there's, before this stuff, there's a huge homeless situation where, you know, we don't give food to the homeless directly, but we, there are ways for the homeless to get food. I believe in that. So even when you donate, you have to do it properly.
Well, yeah. And that's, I mean, that was the thing is that, you know, I like that it was socially responsible. Sometimes the responsible thing is to let it go, unfortunately. But I mean, if you can be sure and safe that it's, you know, safe for other people to eat, food shelters, you food know, banks, people need it. And, you know, think, and it's all going to be covered by insurance for the most part. But
well, you know, I think everyone needs to know, and all the restaurateurs need to know if they're young, don't get disheartened in general, no matter what you apply for, whether it was, is with your landlord or mortgage or whatever avenue that you're fighting, that you're going to get denied first, because that's just the way it is usually 99% of the time. And expect to fight. Expect to fight, expect to negotiate with everyone. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to fight. And we have to be adaptable. And that's what makes us New Yorkers. You know, we're resilient. We're adaptable. We have to fight. And we also have to say in this particular case that it's not anything I did. Right now, the best thing to do for me, and I think it's because of experience. You know, I've been doing this for 20 years. I've had many restaurants. In certain cases, I held on to things when I shouldn't have. But in this case, it was so clear, the evidence, that the smart decision to do right then and there was to shut down business for now until further notice. And I was right to do so. Thank God. Thank God.
Well, because, no.
Yeah.
I mean, well, you're helping yourself. You're helping the customers. You're helping your staff. It's sometimes that is the right decision. And I've been seeing that in the last couple of weeks. A lot of our US Pizza team members who Galbani supports, they are our platinum team sponsor, and they do so much for this team. A lot of our team members have had to make that decision as well. That's what I want people to kind of hear and learn from what you've had to do, being kind of at the epicenter. We're all kind of following in New York's tracks. We're all a few weeks behind you guys because it hit you guys first and the hardest. So, you know, I got a couple more points I want to get to, but I mean, you closed down. It was your conscious decision. It was the right thing to do. You have plans to reopen. Did you have plans to reopen before you decided to close the doors? Or is that something you were started working on the next day? And then if any other tips on if somebody had to shut down because of the situation, if obviously they're going to try to reopen, what are the best practices on making sure that happens and it goes smoothly? I mean, keeping your customers, keeping your employees and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, so for the employees, you know, to have open, honest, transparent communication, to be direct about it, to reach out, make sure your managers are in personal contact, make sure stupid details like updated information is done so that everyone is getting in the information. Immediately in the beginning, we decided we have to try and protect our key employees and then our by the hour employees with the government. It made most sense for them to file for unemployment after we reviewed the whole package and we informed them of it. And being, like you said, honest and transparent and communicating with them obviously is the best thing. And it's not like you're losing them to go somewhere else. Everyone's in the same boat. So you're hoping that, you know, you're going to get them back and you're going to communicate. The thing is, I don't know when we're going to open again because it largely depends on what, you know, the governor says. For example, like you said, the MTA, you know, the governor said you need to shut down. And even though the MTA, who is basically employed by the governor, is, you know, is saying we're not going to penalize you, but you're still paying rent, which I think is ridiculous. You know, you have to follow.
Well, and that's a fight a lot of people are having, you know, as far as like having a fight with their landlords and the landlords still want to get paid, but sometimes they're very lenient, but the landlords also have bills to pay. So it's one of those catch-22s, infinite loop, chicken and the egg type of thing. So, but most people, if you approach them, we're all in the same situation. So it's one of those things you know, hopefully they're going to be willing to work for you, with you, I should say. So, But I mean, it's great that you have that in place for your employees to come back. You know, they yeah, don't like go through any fault of their own.
I also think that, and this goes up and down. First of all, are you a good tenant to begin with? And hopefully that if you were always been a good tenant, that's going to mean a lot during negotiations. And I think the same way, if you're good, you're a good employee, you're going to be the first to be asked back. So it all goes down also to work ethic, to honesty, to transparency, to integrity, and how you are as a person. And I think that does go a long way. I think there's an element of, you know, deep reflection during this time. I think everyone's taken a big pause and you know, there is this attitude, and I know everyone says, and I know a few people that were devastated because they said, you don't know, I'm going to lose everything. No, you don't know. You don't know. I'm like, no, I do know, because I am too. And so is everyone else. But I said, you know, at least we're not sick. And then, you know, the next day someone was sick or someone was on a vent. Oh. And they're like, my God, just let them be okay. So paramount is health, and we will rebound from this. And maybe people are going to go out of business, but you know, it's not the first time restaurateurs go out of business, and that sucks. Trust me, I know, but we will rebound. I hope to rebound very strongly. I feel we are going to rebound very strongly. I think in a new way. I think delivery is going to become huge. And I think the pizzerias who do it better, who start looking at, you know, containers and masks and contactless delivery and sanitation and social distancing and all the protocols we can put in. I think the people that pizzeria owners that are the first ones to do it and do it well are going to be much better off than coming up with any other, you know, type of marketing tactics that don't have anything to do with COVID. If they have something to do with pricing, I think that they're missing the boat. I'm not to say that pricing isn't important, but I think most importantly, like you said, it's addressing the obvious, which is just because they say we're open for business doesn't mean everyone's not afraid. So we have to earn our customer back one by one again, and earn that by letting them feel that they're in as safe environment as can be, that we're ultra conscious of what's going on with COVID, and that we're doing everything to keep our employees safe and our customers safe. So that's where all my energy and my managers and partners' energy is going. And obviously, yes, we're filing, we're arguing with everyone, our landlords, our insurance companies. We're keeping up to date with our employees, who I have to say have been wonderful. And to all the restaurateurs out there, whatever relationships you have moving forward, whether it's a good, you know, I have a good relationship with Galbani, and they I called them for the cheese, and of course they said yes right away. Whatever, everyone has their own relationships. Leverage those relationships for help. I think we're all in the same boat.
Yeah. I can't say enough about Galbani either.
A long way.
Yeah, and again, I can't say enough about Galbani being the biggest supporter of our team and doing a lot of things for us. And actually, they sponsored Pizza Kitchen, so I'm using their cheese all the time. So
I'm wearing Galbani I'm wearing blue today.
I noticed that, but there was no logo, but I did notice that.
Well, I thought it kind of would look weird if I had a Galbani chef coat if I'm home, right?
Nope. I'm wearing my chef coat. I put it on special for you. So.
Okay, I'm going to wear my Galbani chef coat next time.
All right, but I did want to acknowledge everybody who's tuning in right now. Carmelo, again, thank you for tuning in. He's been on every single one of these. Freddie Barlow, before we even did this, he wanted to say, I'm going to put it up there. Thank you, PMQ Pizza Magazine, for allowing me in this month's edition, taking over or talking about third-party delivery. You're welcome, Freddie. We love good content from people who know about what they're talking about. So Albert Takasaki. He's judged a couple of our competitions. He says, hi, Donatello.
Hi.
And he says he likes watching you on Iron Chef. Now, Tim Rash, he's appreciating that we're hosting these videos. And he actually does, I think he's the first question that we got. Any suggestion for comeback coupons? I think that's great, because that was going to be my next question. Is like, it was kind of the last question, the plan to reopen. So, I mean, what's kind of your target audience? What's your game plan in that? As far as setting up your comeback? Are you just, I mean, are you there so much that people are just going to come back because you're in the
tourist
spots?
I think the target is, and I even said, because my manager, he's a sweetheart, he's like, we got to start, you know, getting a sign ready. We're like, we're back. I'm like, no, that's not good enough. It has to specifically say, we're back and you should come here because, you know, we have
call to action.
We have this, we have that. I think it should just really, you should be in your face to your customer about COVID and how you are better than next door in terms of what you're doing, whether it's individually wrapped stores, like everything has to be looked at, especially in the food industry when hands are touching everything in fast food industry, when every detail has to be looked at about how to not transfer germs. So
yeah, when we were talking earlier too,
that's what I'm addressing. That's the signage that I'm addressing. That's where the coupons and social media and direct marketing will go for sure. People will not. I'm going to be the hardest hit. You know, the high rent, high reward, but the biggest risk. So Grand Central is hard hit, and people are going to be, I don't think, or even when it opens, are going to just be running to the train station. I think there's going to be huge concerns. And I think the same with, I'm in a hotel, Times Square, tourist. I don't think the tourists are wanting back either. That just because we reopen society doesn't mean, you know, the travel restrictions are going to open up. And even if they do, I don't think people are going to be running on their plane. They're going to be like, oh, you know what? Do I really need to travel to New York or can I set up a Zoom call? So I think that there's, even when things open up, people are not going to be running. So I think my focus is going to be on outreach to the New Yorkers more so than tourists right now. And in general, whether it's a tourist or whatever, just really being at the forefront of anything COVID. And I'm, like I said, I talk to my husband every day about all the measurements to put in because, you know, even talking about masks, and I'll give you an example. I don't know if we have time, but when all this stuff was happening, he's like, you know, here's the issue with the mask discussion. Masks are good because they're good at preventing the spread. They don't really protect you. They protect others from spreading on you. But the problem is, if you go outside and you put a mask on and you come home and you take it off. So a lot of people grab the mask like this, they take it off. And now all the germs that were on the mask just went on your hands and then you start touching yourself. So you've actually caused more infection with that mask if you don't use it properly. So I think masks are correct, but people are using it improperly and that's incorrect. So just telling the public wear a mask, I don't think is enough. And actually, I told my husband, you should do a 60-second online YouTube about taking masks on and off and all the things that should be done. So I'm going to make him do that today. But
absolutely right. I mean, the masks, it's less, it's more for the people who are infected to keep it when they cough or sneeze, keep it from going out versus protect it from coming in. So, I mean, you do have to understand what you're doing. It doesn't hurt to wear a mask at all. Wear it if you got them. Support them with pride.
But I think
put your logo on the front.
Yeah, I actually, and let's see if I'm right about this. I think that if we reopen society, they're going to require that everyone wears masks. And it's not the, and like you said, obviously, if you're coughing and have symptoms of cold or COVID, of course you wear a mask. But as we know, there are many people that are asymptomatic and have COVID. So they could be spreading it without knowing it. So
that's the biggest problem right now.
Right. So that's why everyone should be wearing a mask and using it properly to stop the spread. It's just, I think that's what's going to happen. And I think that's what my restaurant's going to look like when we reopen.
And that's fine. I mean, I put up the graphic because we were talking about you changing the mindset. And it's going from sanitization to sterilization. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where, you know, yes, of course we sanitize everything. We clean it up after every day, but we have to take it to that next step to be sterile, like a hospital. The pizzerias now have to be like a hospital.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
Everybody's getting trained that way right now, as far as operators and stuff like that. Customers, they're the same. Like you said, some of them are wearing masks, some aren't. But it's going to be a new normal. It's not going to go back to the old normal. We're never going to get back there. So I don't like New World Order. It just sounds scary to me. But a new situation, I'll put it that way.
Yeah,
but I did want to kind of jump over to some of these questions that we got. Some people chiming in. Mike Doniker, again, another guy. I interviewed him, but he's been on every single one of these. You know, he says, you know, people's mindsets are going to – they're going to change. We have to wait and see what's going to happen. So you have to have a plan for sure as far as, like, reopening. And he did follow that up. You know, give locals a great incentive offer, gather the data, and even if it's just pickup, make them aware that if your food and you are here when they are ready, that it's a great offer will drive the locals. I'm sorry, I was reading that really fast. Tim Roush, I was trying to get to Tim Roush's question, though. He jumped on earlier, but any thought on operators increasing prices to recoup the loss when they open back up? I mean, is that something you thought about? Are you going to come back with your regular prices, or do you have to kind of do a little bit of markup, and do you think people would be accepting of that?
You know, we already in Grand Central, we're already it's acceptable to have higher prices in general because of the high rent there. I didn't think about that right now. I don't like, that's a dangerous thing. The raising of prices to cure problems is a dangerous slope, I feel. I'm not saying no. Like I said, every pizzeria is different. And if they felt that they needed to raise their prices anyway, and they were going in that direction, in my case right now, I don't think I would raise prices. But like okay, I said, everyone is different. And in general, I think that's a dangerous thing.
Okay. So, I mean, that's obviously not anything that you've done currently. So, everybody needs to be conscious.
No, and also remember, all the people coming back to work, you know, either have been laid off or have a lot of financial insecurity. Right. So they're going to be watching. They already unsure about going to a restaurant and feel safer cooking it on themselves. And they're going to be watching everything. I think people are watching everything in general and looking at all their expenses. So I would be very leery about doing that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you got to communicate it, but you're trying to lure them to you again. You know, you don't want to scare off the squirrel. No sudden hand movements, i.e. large price increases. I mean, what is the main thing that you were thinking about when you had to reopen? I mean, I know you decided to close for safety. What's the main thing you're focusing on right now?
I think the biggest thing for us is focusing on the delivery. And, you know, I know in general, a lot of pizzerias, their biggest complaint is going through these third party deliveries that are already costing and have such high markups in general to begin with. And now if we're going to focus on delivery even more, maybe thinking about how to outreach your customer and make them order directly to you instead of through these, you know, all the big famous chains that are these basic brokers that are doing huge markups. So my focus will be delivery, grassroots marketing of the people in the area and the COVID, communicating why we think that we're doing a really good job and on the leading edge in terms of research and what's going on to make it as safe as possible. But I think
delivery sounds huge.
I think focusing on the packaging, on the quality of delivery, on getting the pizza there hot, you know, basic stuff.
Well, and that's the difference is that that's pretty basic to a lot of the people out there in the industry already. But you being in New York, downtown New York, that's delivery is tricky. So is there any other things, adaptations you've had to make that you want to keep past this? I mean, everybody's being forced to do a lot of stuff they weren't doing already. Maybe they should have been doing it, but now they're doing it and they want to keep it. Is there one thing right now that you're like, that really works or that looks like it could really work? And, you know, when you reopen, you're going to institute it, be it online ordering or, like you said, delivery. That's the one thing. Is there another one?
Yeah. in my situation in particular, like, for example, we don't do delivery at Grand Central because the business, it was so small and we were so busy that we really couldn't do delivery and we didn't need to. We had to focus on the high transaction time of the people that are there. But that might change now with Grand Central. So Grand Central is maybe focusing on setting up the whole delivery, and then Moxie is focusing on outreach to the residential people in the tourist area. Like I said, I think you really have to just look at your business model in each case and where you are, and then make the best decision. I everything is individual to your location, to your rent.
True.
So it's hard to get a
geographical location, you know, yeah, your location and business model. It's not going to be the same for everybody, but there's somebody, some people who can actually benefit from what you're talking about too. And then I do have one last subject that I want to talk on, and I'm pretty sure you could probably talk about it at length. Staying with three children at home, what are you doing? That's a big thing right now. I mean, schools are closed, so I didn't even think about people are having to homeschool. You know, what are you doing? You got three children at home, right? Your husband, being a doctor, he's busy as all get out. So what are you doing?
You should see what it was like to lock my door to make sure no one came in during this FaceTime call. And I just realized that my son missed his FaceTime Zoom with his teacher, so I'm gonna get a demerit. It's really.
Well, you can point her to this. That's funny.
You know, it's a difficult situation. It's really difficult, and I am a female in the industry, in the pizza industry, and we are in the minority. I always get asked that question, and I think that, of course, I'm generalizing, and there are a lot of men that take on this role. But I think I hope my husband's not listening because he's going to say he's pitching in. But I think I'm bearing the brunt of it. It's really hard. And my son, he's in the eighth, he's eight. So I think the parents that have older kids, a lot of them can do the stuff on their own and follow. And in the really young ones, which I have too, that's difficult. But he really needs to be watched all day. And it's another job I have. It's difficult. I have to make sure everything's uploaded, that he's doing his work. And he's going nuts. You want to keep him off technology. But at the same time, you know, the poor kid was, it's hard. And we're working, and you know, I have to cook. I have a lot to do, and like I said, in certain ways, I'm not making money, but I'm busier than ever. So and I need to, like you said, how do you keep going? You keep going by being relevant and making sure that I'm talking about my restaurant, my brand, because I worked so hard about all my great partnerships like Galbani, which is so important to me. Until because they're the people that, you know, support me until I get back on my feet. And so it's hard. I hope the teachers are listening out there, because I think they need to be, I think they just need to keep the kids online all day, but they don't. It's like 40 minutes session and then 3 hours of work, which basically parents are managing.
Well, aside from that though, I mean, obviously, yes, it's difficult for everybody at this point, but I mean, what are you doing to keep them entertained when you have to? I mean, are you like cooking with them in the kitchen, or are you teaching them about your craft, about restaurant? And are you sitting them down and giving them basics in the, you know, business economics for restaurant? Or
I am. I actually just made Madeline's with my son the other day. I try to keep them engaged as much as possible. We try to exercise every day. That's very important. We do his live PE class together, I think, in this time. And something my husband talks about as well, when you're quarantined, you're kind of setting people up for failure, where I think, you know, alcohol increases, bad eating habits increase, you know, and everyone talks about foods being out in the stores, but I noticed that the produce is never out. And, you know, we really don't have food shortages, just that people are getting all the junk. They're not getting fresh produce, which they can cook and eat. And, you know, luckily I grew up with a mother from Puglia and a father from Naples, and I grew up on a Mediterranean diet, and I'm cooking every night. We don't order in because we didn't order in anyway when we could order in. We rarely ordered in once in a while. So cooking, we eat dinner as a family, and I'm trying to keep basic structure in the day, which I think is very important.
No, it's good. And like you said, it's like even when I went to the grocery store, even before this happened, before there was a rush, I was thinking, do I get the fresh produce? And I'm like, yeah, I want to. I want to have all my fresh vegetables, cucumbers, zucchinis, all that stuff. But am I going to eat it fast enough? I didn't want to hoard it because there's only so much you can eat before it goes bad. And then that's why the Doritos aisle is gone. Unfortunately,
I know, but don't you find that? And I mean, the hoarding is ridiculous because we don't have food shortages, and I find it very fatiguing to eat stuff that's frozen and although I have to say that I am cooking things that I haven't cooked in a while, only because the go-to stuff is not around. So I made like osobuco last night because there was veal, as opposed to, like, right now all I see is chopped meat and chicken. I don't see much. And then you have like the random, like, thing that's more expensive that people don't want to buy right now. So, but I like short, small batch shopping. You know, I buy pantry items, which you need, but then I try to, I think the produce is around. But it, like I said, it depends on where you are, what the delivery situation is, what the restrictions are. So you got to do your best.
Well, I like how you said that you guys are trying to stay active and you have the PE session every day. That's great. And it, I was just wondering about New York, because New York is different from most of the places in the U.S. A lot of places in the U.S. grow outward. New York grows upward because you just have so many people. So there's not a whole lot of space for you to go out and do a lot of stuff outside physically. I mean, I'm sure there is, but I mean, not compared to a lot of other places. So it's trying to keep their body and their mind, you know, energized.
But there's a lot of free online classes now being offered by so many incredible people, whether it's in cooking or exercise. So there's all these virtual classes and there's a lot of opportunity in that way. And you have to take advantage of it. And you can't take the shortcuts because they catch up to you. So you got to try as much as you can to keep the kids off technology so that when they need to be on it, it's more productive, I think. But it's hard.
It is at this point. They have to be, especially with the school. And it's nice that schools are giving those things out. So this helps. But I mean, I see you got a couple young ones. And how old is your oldest one? Is he like helping out? Is he interested in getting in the kitchen and doing some cooking?
He's my 8-year-old, and I have 1.5-year-old twins. So they're helping at making a disaster. And my son is a difficult eater. So I try to. Everyone always asks me how to deal with difficult eaters, and I say encourage them to cook with you, and come in the kitchen. So I try to do that. I really try because, you know, whenever you even give a cooking lesson, you're teaching them science, you're teaching them math, you're teaching them research. You're teaching them creativity. I mean, I think, you know, pizza is a science. So I think pizza is fascinating. You could talk about pizza all the time. I've done pizza workshops in his schools at various stages through his life, and the kids love it. It's such a great thing. And the more you know, the more they'll be inclined to not eat the crap. But if you just say, don't eat the crap, but you explain to them what chemicals do to you and preservatives, and I think they're on a better path that way.
So. Well, absolutely. Like you said, just involve them in it. And that gets the understanding to where this is why you want to eat this, especially with the difficult eaters. Like you said, it's like, all right, if I'm going to cook something, you're not going to eat it. What do you want to cook? And there you go. You know, let them take the reins and, you know, follow them.
You know what? And it inspires that passion, tonight. I think. I'm going to tell them, like, you know what? You don't like this? You cook.
Absolutely. Like, right. Do like the blackjack dealer.
Yeah, I'm going to try that tonight. I'm going to tell him you said that, too. I'm going to do that.
Yeah, give him my email. He can email me. So, I know I definitely appreciate all your time here today. Is there kind of pare down some of the 3 best tips for somebody who's had to close down, if they're thinking about closing down, and to reopen? What are some of the things that you've learned that you can instill into the industry today?
I think that if you haven't closed down, but you're losing more than you would be if you didn't, you should take that hard decision and close. You don't want to put good money into bad, and then just wait it out and look into all the government and all the, and start negotiating and fighting and doing the best you can, and realizing that we're all in the same boat, and hopefully there's going to be some lifesavers out there for all of us. But to make that hard decision and just do it, and you're not a failure for doing it. And I, like I said, it goes against, especially pizzeria owners. We just want to stay open. We think, especially if you're immigrant born, it like totally goes against our being. And then just focus on all the creativity, creating new products, new ideas, great new profiles. And for when you reopen, try and keep your good employees if you can. If you filed, I did everything on time. I filed for everything. I'm not paying rent to the tenant, to the landlord that asked. I'm paying my employees instead, and I'm rightfully asking for rent forbearance for what's going on. So I'm hoping we'll see what happens. I don't know what's going to happen. We'll see. And realize that there's an element you don't know, and you got to be okay with that. And try to focus and come from a place of gratitude and try and stay positive. I think it's really important, and keep your body healthy and keep going. I mean, I know it sounds kind of wholesome, but I think it's true. You gotta do it.
Well, that's why I've been saying stay safe and stay sane. This has given me an opportunity to go back and like learn a lot of songs I used to play on guitar and all that stuff, put it out there. Yeah. It's therapeutic for me to relearn them, but put it out there and people are appreciating it. Same with you, like you said, going back and cooking recipes you hadn't done in a long time. This is a time for reflection, honestly. It's been forced upon us, but if you're not doing that right now, you're wasting this time that, you have to do that.
And I do think, and I'll close with this, I mean, not all bad things come to harm us, and this was a bad thing, but I think that there was something kind of crazy going on in our society, and I think we're all taking pause and restock in our life and mm-hmm. getting our priorities straight. And I think hopefully we're going to come out a little bit kinder, a little bit wiser, and a little bit more focused on on the things that should be focused. And we should honor the people that we're honoring now, not just right now because they're out there saving lives, because I think people have a short memory, and instead of the current pop star or YouTube star and all that. I think mm-hmm. the focus of society is so warped sometimes. And I think especially for this younger generation, I think this is kind of like the equivalent of our generation experiencing war, in essence, of what our parents always talked about. You know, my parents were children of war, and they talked about the food lines, and they have that immigrant mentality of saving. And we grew up in a culture of kind of entitlement and privilege. Most of us, in terms of not seeing what war really is like or discomfort really is like. And now, the virus has no discrimination against race, against socioeconomic background. Right. So it's hitting everyone. And hopefully people are taking pause and reflecting and valuing each other and their family and their time and in silence sometimes, because it's a very distracted society with our technology. We're all guilty of it. Maybe by pausing, it's giving us time to think about what's best for our business when we reopen too. And every pizzeria owner, I think, knows their location. And if they sit and think, they'll know what's best to do and trust their reaction to do it. But my biggest advice is if you haven't closed yet, and you should be, and everyone's telling you should, like the government and whatever area you are, rip the bandaid off and do it. Because maybe if people did it all sooner, maybe if people did it sooner, we can reopen sooner. I'm hoping.
Well, no, I mean, it's all good advice right there. I mean, just the positive message I love. And I do, Carmelo, I see everything you're posting up here. This is the last thing he just posted. I do have another question from Tim Rash something. But Carmelo says, thank you, Donatella. I think it's always typing to be Donatello, but thank you, Donatello. Be safe, and they're going to rebuild and come out of this stronger in the restaurant business. And that's the message I'm getting from everybody, honestly.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. So, but Tim Rush, I did want to put this question up. He got it in the last second. One more question, please. Sure. What are your thoughts discussing reduced cost with our insurance providers?
I did immediately. One of the things we did was while we closed, one of the first things, and I'm lucky, one of my partners is a lawyer. And even though I'm a former attorney, I practiced for like 2 months, and that was like 20 years ago. But I realized that it's important in today's time to have a good friend or partner that's a lawyer. So for insurance premiums, I contacted my insurance company the day after we closed. And I just said, whatever sales I was doing, I reduced it to like very minimal because I want to keep the policy going. So it automatically reduced my premiums. And then as soon as I reopen, I'll increase it. So that's definitely something you should do. You should look at every expense. You shouldn't pause the essentials like the internet and the phone, because that's the first thing that you don't want there to be a lag on. But you should literally go through everything, call everybody. And every company or line of company is also doing, a lot of people have different promotions for COVID. So. Mm. You got to look at everything.
Well, a lot of them are stepping up to the plate too. They weren't being asked. I mean, some of these people have already put these things in place, so you can just say, "Hey, do you have something like that?" And that's what I really like, is that even like third parties are knocking out their commissions and all that stuff. Because that was the biggest gripe, is the 30% commission on third parties. It was just killing some of the independents. So people are stepping up. We all understand we're all humans in the same boat right now.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't look at everything, ask for everything. If you don't ask, you're not going to get it. And if you don't, and don't take the first no as, you know, devastation, whether it's from the insurance claim that automatically are set up to deny. I mean, I'd kind of be shocked if they didn't. So, but keep fighting, for sure. Keep fighting and don't take no for an answer, and try and keep positive.
All right, so I'm just going to say three letters to you, and then just, you know, give me a nod or a wink or whatever. But the GCT,
Grand Central Terminal. What do you mean nod or a
wink? Oh, well, you're talking about something that you just found out. Breaking news.
No, I, you know, they did make a rent request, and we definitely are refusing to pay, and are asking them to speak to us and reconsider, especially since in this particular case, it's the MTA, and the MTA is, you know, answers to the governor who told us to close. So.
Okay. Well, I didn't mean to put you on the spot there, but you told me right before we started. It's like, you know, I'm just getting this. We can talk about it. So that's all I written down was GCT. That was my notes.
Oh, okay.
GCT.
I love Grand Central.
All right. Well, Donatella, I really appreciate your time. I know you've been battling with, you know, internet quality and stuff like that. It's the same as myself. I do apologize for my low quality, guys. I'm trying to get better upload speeds. But Donatella, your time is precious, as we all of ours is right now. Unfortunately, being closed, a lot of times we're busier than ever. It's insane in this in this day and age.
Yes.
So, I mean, just give me one more just final note and where people can reach you if they maybe have a question, kind of reach out through like Facebook or something like that.
DonatellaArpaia.com, or you can email me, Donatella@DonatellaGroup.com. That's my direct email. Okay. And follow me. Follow me on Instagram, on Facebook. Follow me.
Yeah, and I thought I had those things set up too. I must have not saved it.
Maybe maybe you'll see a mom meltdown. I mean, it definitely can happen.
Well, and that's the thing too, is just keep putting out those positive posts. I mean, at this point, you just have to put out the positive posts.
Yeah.
Kind of keep the normalcy so that we don't all go insane. You know, we're all finding our ways to cope. I'm sorry if I'm very tired and loopy today. We had a big storm here last night. My car is under the tree in my front yard. So as soon as I'm done here, I got to get out a chainsaw and deal with that.
All right.
So
we've all got our things. I'll come back with more updates. As soon as we open, I will be proudly calling you to let you know.
Oh, absolutely. Well, yeah, we'll definitely circle back around with a PMQ live update as soon as you guys reopen. Let us know how that just how the progression of that went, because I mean, it's got to be hard. You want to maintain your customers. I mean, there's a lot of things that go along with just reopening, even if you're not closing permanently. So, I wanted to thank Donatella. I am not going to be here tomorrow. I'm taking a day off to dig my car out of the tree. But Lenny Rago, who's actually in one of the same situations, he closed his restaurant due to safety and stuff like that. I'm going to be talking with him on Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time. But Donatella, once again, thank you so much for your time. Keep your kids sane and safe, and you know, keep some of those recipes coming out, all those recipes. I want to thank Galbani, you know, for putting us in touch and for being such a great sponsor of our team. And I just can't say enough about Galbani and yourself as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, hold on one sec. There's like three extra things at the end that people are spamming in. Okay. All right. So, Noah, Dungeon Chat Experts. Great interview. Thank you, Dungeons. Matt Ketheridge. That's all right, man. It happens. You know, we're covered, and it's not the house, so we're all safe. And, I didn't mean to throw my stuff there at the end, but at least we know people are watching to the end. So, all right. Give a sign us off there, Donatella, and we'll go from there.
Bye-bye.
Ciao.